She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. We are disruptors for good. We're game changers, doing the good thing, the right thing, not just for ourselves, but for all beings who call the earth home. Thanks so much for listening and for being a part of our world. Now, a big shout out and thanks to the sponsor of this show, Tanks Green Stuff. It's a locally produced, organic compost product made from landscape trimmings, also known as green waste, that would otherwise go to the landfill. Their manufacturing facility uses the most stringent criteria to ensure quality, purity, and consistency for their compost. Tanks Green Stuff, 100% organic, certified organic soil amendment, contains no fertilizers or petrochemical additives. They always test for vital nutrients, pathogens, and heavy metals to make sure their compost is the best and highest quality available. Plus, I have to add, their company is a great partner of ours, and they support many community efforts in our town, in our city, in our county, providing support and compost at no charge to schools and other nonprofits. They're just an amazing organization. For more information about their product and where it can be purchased or found locally, you can visit tanksgreenstuff.com, and I certainly hope you do. They're a company worth supporting. So, needless to say, I am very excited about this show. It's another important and informative show that we have lined up. Who's watching our food and water? That's the big question. And joining me for this next hour is someone from Food and Water Watch, one of the most impressive and impactful organizations doing critical work to protect our environment in existence. And I don't say that lightly. I interview thousands of people all in the past 10 years or hundreds, and Food and Water Watch is such a standout. So please join me in welcoming David Hunt, Senior Strategist for Food and Water Watch. And a little bit more about the organization. It champions healthy food and clean water for all. They stand up to and take on corporations that put profits before people and advocate for a democracy that improves people's lives and protects our environment. It's why I'm so passionate about the work they do. They are working every day on our behalf to create a healthy future for our families and for generations to come. A world where all people have the resources they need, including wholesome food, clean water, and sustainable energy. It's a world I want to live in. David, welcome.
Gina, thank you so much for inviting me. And thank you for that wonderful description of the work that we here in Food and Water Watch do to save our planet and to, quite frankly, to also save our democracy.
Thank you for adding that. Save our democracy, a concept that I never thought I would have to worry about, but I do indeed quite a bit these days. So that being said, is there anything that I left out that you'd like to add about Food and Water Watch? I mean, it is a powerful and impactful organization that has many wins, and I don't want to miss anything in making that introduction so that our listeners have a sense for the magnitude and scope of the work you're doing.
Oh, you capsulized it quite wonderfully. I'd also add to it that we fight on issues like banning fracking, which we've been successful to do in New York and in Maryland and parts of California. We're going to be successful in Florida, all around this country and in other places around the world. Our work to save our planet from the destruction of those who are both greedy and ignorant, from those who have more coin in their pocket right now, that if they never got one more coin in their pocket, their grandchildren's grandchildren would never go for want. But just for more coin and just for their own purposes of greed and ignorance, they will destroy our planet and destroy the lives on our planet. And we are dedicated to preserving our planet and at the same time restoring our democracy.
And I just can't tell you how much I love that you said that. So you do advocate, I thought this was very interesting because I really read, I'm a word steward, so every word is impactful to me and your website is a masterpiece, but one of the things that it said, it advocates that you, Food and Water Watch advocates for common sense policies that improve the way our food is grown and produced and make our drinking water safe and affordable. And I found the phrase common sense policies jumping out at me. At the end of the day, why is that so important? And what do you mean by that? And it does make sense. They're common sense issues.
They are, you know, and people try to confuse it by using language and words to confuse what this is all about. I'm glad you used the word policy. You know, the word policy is Greek for behavior. And so therefore, government policy is government behavior. And even when we use the word pollution, we're kind of hiding behind the fact that what we're talking about is poison. You know, back in the 60s and 70s when we started to have environmental controls to stop the amount of poison being put into our air, we called it pollution control, being put into our air and into our water, into our land. But basically because that pollution was harming, making people sick, diseased, and then quite frankly, killing people. So we put these behaviors in place to stop poisoning people called pollution policies. And so we got to remember, that's what we're all about here. How do we ensure that our government of the people, for the people, and by the people, are putting behaviors in place that will stop the poisoning of our people, not just yesterday and today, but for generations to come? That's what we're really talking about. You know, let me also talk about this generations to come, by the way. Do you know, Gina, for every woman, every egg that she will ever have, is put into her 2 months before she even takes her first breath.
Right.
So where is she 2 months before she takes her first breath? She's in her mother's womb. So it is, in fact, your grandmother who is eating for the child within and the child within, which becomes you. It is your grandmother who's drinking the water for the child within her and the seed within that child, which becomes you. It is your grandmother who's breathing the air for herself and the child within, which becomes us. So if our grandmother is eating, drinking, smelling poisons, it's not only impacting her, but it's also impacting the child within and the eggs within that female child. So there's three generations impacted by it. So that's what we're trying to stop, to continue poisoning and killing of not only this generation, but for generations to come. And that's what we're up against.
And it's so true. I mean, I had a childhood, a pediatric neurologist who's a friend of mine. Sorry that I forgot your title, Janet, but she was on the show some time ago and she talked about how many toxins they find in the umbilical cord of newborn babies. And it's upward now close to 300. It was 287. So your point is well taken. I mean, they get there somehow. And, you know, if we knew what lies beneath, even in our own bodies right now, it would give us all pause. So my next question, which might take up the rest of the show, and I'm okay with that, but what are we up against, David? Can you highlight some of the bigger, bolder challenges we're facing? I mean, your website articulates at least 9 or 10 areas very clearly. So talk about some of the things that we are facing in terms of broken democracy, climate change, and the environment. Just share with us some of I would call them the big 9 or 10.
Well, let's start with the fact that, you know, a society is held together by a set of beliefs, a set of stories, a set of myths, just like organizations are and companies are. And our society is held together by a set of beliefs that says that, you know, that all humans are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, amongst which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the role of government is to preserve and protect those rights. And the next sentence says, and it's the right of the people to rise up and overthrow said government if the government fails to do so and to replace it with a more perfect union. So that's where we are right now, quite frankly. We are now at a point where over 83% of Americans don't believe that the government now represents the people. They believe that the government is represented by corporate America and by international forces. The majority of Americans don't believe anymore that their vote even counts. And the third principle that really holds our society together besides those two is that justice is blind. And most Americans don't believe that either. So our democracy, the fundamental beliefs in our democracy have eroded. And our job is to reestablish those beliefs by rising up and making changes to our government. So there's two things specifically as relates to some of the issues we're working on. You asked for an example of some of the threats we're under. So, you know, in California, which grows a huge percentage of our produce, our fruits, our vegetables, our nuts, oil companies in specific parts of California are using their drilling operations and the liquids that come from that to irrigate our crops. So it's over 173 chemicals which are mixed in there, which legally we're not supposed to find out about. But all these chemicals that they were used while they were pulling oil up out the ground, some cases fracking, they are now spreading on our crops in California, including Halo's mandarin oranges, for example, a very popular snack which is used and they market as being purely goodness. Palm Wonderful juice, pomegranate juice, wonderful pistachios, Sunview raisins, Bee Sweet citrus, Sun Home wine. So even our wines are now being polluted by the oil industry. So let's be clear what we're up against here. We're up against some of the most powerful forces on the planet of the earth who make their money by pulling things out of the ground and putting into our air and our water and our land that then poison us. And now it's finding a way to get around getting rid of their toxic waste by spraying it on our food, therefore impacting us not just today, but for generations to come. Now, that's just one example of now how big oil and agriculture, big agriculture, are coming together to make more money at the expense of our life, liberty, and our pursuit of happiness.
And that's how it's attacking our democracy. I mean, it is broken. And the thing that when you say that, I sit here thinking, how many millions of people don't know about it? They're ignorant that it's happening. And I just this morning, I was at a group I'm a member of, and one of the women was really upset because a colleague of her died at 45 years old of brain cancer. And David, I'm telling you, and I know that you know this, I'm not the scientist, I'm not the researcher, but I have been doing this work for almost 11 years. All of these things to me, younger people, children, all of these maladies are related to these issues that you're taking on. That's a big deal. That poisons our bodies. That's comes in and we don't know what to do with it. So it's just, it's taking away my freedom because I didn't even know that right was being violated. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's
absolutely,
it's pretty devastating. And then
they that's what they do. You know, they use words to kind of confuse it. Even the thing called climate change and global warming. Those terms were actually invented to soften the impact. What we're talking about is the annihilation of our planet.
Yes.
The destruction of all life on our planet. That's what we're actually talking about. Look, I just spent 3 weeks in New Zealand. Beautiful country, beautiful people. And a couple of things happened while I was there that relates to what we're talking about here. One thing that happened, the people came up when they found out I was American, and with sincere, open-hearted concern, they said to me, "We are so sorry about what's happening in America."
Right.
They too see this and feel sorry for us and sorry for the world. And so the whole world is watching and seeing not only what we're doing to destroy ourselves, but to destroy them. While I was there, the new prime minister, a 37-year-old woman, new to the prime minister's office, but been working in government for over 10 years, they said they're going to plant over a million trees in the next 10 years, not only for their own country, but for all the surrounding islands in the Pacific that are also being harmed by the pollution we're putting into the air. And so all around the world, people are looking at us, the leader of the world, the most powerful country on the planet, the biggest economy ever, to do something to save ourselves and to save the world.
You know, it's like it makes you speechless, some of the things that are happening, which have been happening for more than the past 2 years, and we know that. But another area that I thought, like, in terms of educating the population, which is everything that Mrs. Green's World is about, I don't think that most people know. You know, you go in the supermarket and you think you have lots of food choices. Look at all this, land of plenty and all that. But really, isn't it true that a handful of corporations own our food supply, food monopolies up one side and down the other? Do we really have a lot of healthy food choices, or is it corporate control?
It is, as you know, a very handful of major corporations that control the production and distribution of our life-sustaining food in this country. Not only do they control it, but they decide what we will eat, when we will eat it, and what goes into that food. They decide what hormones we put into our cows that then goes into our body. They decide what sort of hormones go into our chicken and our pigs that then get come out of them in terms of waste that goes into the ground, that goes into groundwater, that then comes down the Missouri River and pollutes the river to such a point that cities up and down that river and in Iowa as well have to then spend tens of millions of dollars every year cleaning out all of the waste that comes down and all of the pollutants in that from further up from those pig farms and those chicken farms and those cow farms. And so, yes, you know, actually, if you look at the census, less than 2% of Americans are actually farmers.
Right.
They've turned this thing into such a corporate factory. They don't actually need that many people. And most of those people who are working actually make so little money. You know, those who work on these chicken farms basically make less than $30,000 a year and completely are slaves to the chicken industry. So, yes, there are a handful of corporations that are controlled by a handful of Americans and some foreign investors that control the most basic element of our life, our food.
And I'm becoming one of those people that you really don't want at your party, so I'm having to kind of put a lid on it. But one of the
you
things,
too?
Yes, it's like, yeah, oh God, here she comes. Don't get her started. Don't ask her anything about that. But what does it just? It's a trigger for me now is when someone says, "Well, we can do that for like, let's just say a big event, as long as it's not going to cost too much." And I just recently was at, you know, we're doing an event for my Rotary Club, and I just snapped a little bit, and then I got it under control. But I thought. I said out loud, I said, isn't it worth it? Like, it's our environment, and we're trying to help things around the world as Rotary. Don't you think that's an important message? If it costs a little more, let's cut down on something that will cost a little bit less. But it's a mindset of it has to, you know, cost more, and these people will go spend $6 on a latte without even thinking about it. It's like, yeah, good, enjoy that latte. We could just put it in the latte fund. It's like, what? So I try to, you know, put it a little bit under control. And I want to spend quite a bit of time, maybe in the next segment, talking about what's going on with our, you know, clean water plan and all that. But let's stick with, you mentioned a point. When you talk about the control of food by corporations, inherent in all of that is the treatment of the workers. Factory farming and food safety is another one that you take on. There are human beings behind our food that are getting sick. Their kids are getting sick. Their neighborhoods are more polluted. It's just like such a slippery slope. And I want to say to everybody, I promise you we'll get on to some good news before the show is over. So don't
I do have some good
don't
news.
Don't get really sad.
News.
There's lots of good news, but I think you have to know better to do better. And factory farming and food safety, I want to know if what I'm eating is safe. And I would assume most people do, and I think people assume that it is safe. And that's not a safe assumption.
Correct. Well, that is so true. A number of years ago, I went out to Nebraska and went to one of those packing plants where you actually bring the cow in, chop it up, and put it up in packages and send it away. Yeah. And the overwhelming majority of people working there were people who were in the country, came up from other places in Mexico or Central America, South America, working at a very rapid pace in very cold conditions with very sharp knives, most of them without any rights whatsoever, living in camps that most of us would not really think human beings should be living in. And at the same time, I'm looking there at this supposedly U.S. Inspector. And this is one inspector who came in for 2 hours to this huge packing plant and maybe looked at one half or 1% of the meat and said be back in a month. And so the illusion that our meat is being inspected is wrong. The illusion that these are good-paying, healthy jobs that the youth in Nebraska and in Iowa and in Oklahoma, places like that, want to go and do this work. It's just not true. Now, we are a powerful country with great intellectual, financial, physical, and spiritual resources. We can do better. What's stopping us is the fact that these handful of organizations can go to our elected officials and offer them money to do worse. And until we get money out of politics, I want to make this connection to money in politics and our food system. Until we get money out of politics, it'll be hard to create an environment and behavior that will actually lead to better food, better water, better air, and a real life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness in America. Our democracy is under serious threat.
I never thought that I would believe those words, and I just do. I believe it every day. I think there goes another one of my basic human rights in the United States of America, the champions of human rights, or the used-to-be champions of human rights. So when you talk about food safety and farming, and then you put it into the political arena, the hope that I have, the one thing that I can do, besides really getting active on these this year political campaigns, and I am, and my family's involved, my kids are involved, it's so important now more than ever, whatever your beliefs are, go out and fight for them. I mean, it's like left, right, middle, go out and make sure that what you care about is being of value. And the thing that we can do, and we have so much power that we don't take advantage of, is we are consumers. And we are making a difference in some areas. I mean, there are McDonald's that are closing, and I don't want to just beat up on McDonald's, but they're and they are changing some of their what they're supplying as food. So, and the consumers have demanded it. Their customers have demanded it. So we do have power, and we better take it back. You know, remember that campaign, Take Back the Night? Well, we better now take back the day, because it's happening day and night. You know what I mean? And just so that you know, we decided, my husband and I, he's the board operator, have this signal, and we just decided to kill the break, because when you own your own radio show, you can kill the break. And I'm like, no, I don't want to break the flow of this, and I love that I can do that. I was also curious about, I didn't understand at all about pollution trading. Can you speak to that a little bit and what that is? I was like, pollution trading? I don't know about that. What is that?
Oh, this is one of the sickest things you can even think about.
Oh, God. All right. Everybody, so, brace yourself. There will be good news in the last segment.
Yes. There is hope coming. So remember, the word pollution is really poison. So it's poison trading. So here someone comes along and says, this was the first Bush administration, the very first Bush administration, someone in that administration came up with this idea. All right. So you have these factories and plants that have a certain amount of poison they're allowed to put into the air. They have, you know, pollution controls, and they have a certain amount they're allowed to put into the air. And so you have some over here in this neighborhood that haven't reached that level of pollution yet, but not that far away. 20, 30, 40 miles away, there's another one that's actually pretty much at its level of ability to put pollution in the air in terms of what's legal. And so the one that's, you know, still poisoning people at a record rate wants to go over and be able to buy the excess ability of the other factory to poison people. So Wall Street says, okay, let's figure out a way in which we can actually monetize that, monetize the trading of poisoning. And unfortunately, a number of so-called environmental groups are going along with this idea that it's okay to say to a company that is already poisoning people that you can poison them even more just by buying some credit on the stock market.
It's a poison offset. Like, are you kidding me? That's what it's like. How can you offset poison? What?
Right. It's pay to poison, is whatever it basically is. It's pay to poison. And so we, again, can stop this. I mean, this is starting to take place in a few states, but it hasn't spread rapidly yet. And so I would encourage all your listeners to begin to write their congressperson, write their mayors, write their senators, and start saying, we don't want to have this pollution trading taking place in our state. It just makes no sense whatsoever to allow organizations to continue making money poisoning people and then to trade it and make some money by trading it as well.
I mean, when I read about it, I was like, this is a joke. This can't be. Nobody could be that stupid to think that if you're polluting in this air, that things are not airborne, that it doesn't have a ripple effect, that it's not impacting your health. And that is the place from which I come. It is a serious environmental impact, yes, but serious health impacts. And all you have to do is Google which diseases are on the rise, which ones are spreading. You know, by 2030, it's estimated that there'll be a 40% increase in the number of women with breast cancer. Isn't this the new world? Isn't this the modern world where we know about prevention? And it's by 2030, it's going to go up 40%. I mean, it's something's wrong, folks. There's something really brokey. Okay, what about... you know, I just never get tired of talking about GMOs and my best friend Monsanto. What's my BFF? You know, we just love them. And they care about our planet deeply. They're just trying to feed the hungry. I'm like, yeah, and I have a glass of Kool-Aid for you. Would you like a sip? So talk about, you know, it's just unreal to me. When you talk about common sense, if you spray something that I'm going to eat with poison and you rinse it off, it doesn't all get off, and then I eat it. So talk about, you know, the industry going to great lengths to greenwash GMO crops, but what's the current news? What's late breaking in the greenwash area for GMOs? Is there anything hot topic you like to talk about?
Well, the late breaking news is same as usual. Poisoning our people and lying to them about what's being done to stop it. Look, you talked about consumer power earlier on, and the more of us that just says we don't want anything that has GMOs in it, period, the more we'll be able to stop it. Most of Europe doesn't allow that anymore. Parts of Africa are not starting to say no to that. Parts of the world has woke up to this long before we did and said, no, we don't want this. And so we in America just have to start saying no to anything with GMOs, period. Just no. You know, you can say it to your local supermarket, which is fine. But you also might want to start saying this to your local elected bodies. Because remember, city councils and county councils also have a role to play in what foods are actually allowed into your community. And they have a role, too, that they can write to the owners of these companies and say, we don't want any GMOs coming into our city because we don't like it. We don't want any GMOs coming into our county. I'd encourage you to encourage your listeners to start writing to the elected officials and raising these issues. Have them write to the 5 or 6 major grocery stores that supply the food in your community and say, we don't want any more GMOs. Can we have a conversation about this? Can we have a series of discussion of what your grocery store can do to both label bright orange, these products are GMO, but also just make a pledge to get rid of GMOs within 5 years or so. And you're right. You know, the biggest part of the American economy is consumer economy. But we haven't figured out a way to organize our consumer power in such a way to really impact these, because they are very adept at using words to put us to sleep. Even the word organic, as you well know, they figured out a way to get around showing us and revealing to us what's truly organic.
Right.
And so we just have to be ever vigilant, ever vigilant. I want to say one more thing to you. You talked about the health of our people and the growth of breast cancer and asthma.
Tumors, diabetes, pancreatic cancer. With kids, autism, ADD, ADHD, they're all on the rise in this modern world when we have so many, so many bodies of research at our fingertips as to what's causing it. The autism studies are compelling. A lot of it is diet and environment. Hello?
Yeah. Yep. Diabetes, it's rampant. My hometown of Philadelphia, when I go back there, it's rampant. How many people have it and they're going off to treatment for it almost on a regular basis. So again, these things are not natural. Somehow they've convinced us that cancer is a natural occurring thing.
Right.
That diabetes is a natural occurrence, that asthma. No, every city should and every county should require there to be an impact study for about a 5-mile radius around some of these plants that are polluting and say, okay, what's been the health impact of this plant? If everybody did that, we'd be able to see pretty quickly on that these plants that are putting things up into our air, these capos of putting things into our water are basically killing us. And we can put a stop to it.
And David, the thing that it comes down to for me and why I'm such a maniac or advocate, or there are probably nicer words to call myself, but definitely a passionate preserver of the planet, is I believe that I have a right to know what is in my food. I think it's a basic right. And, of course, the DARC Act said I didn't. They said, no, you don't, and we're not going to do it. And then even states that had passed laws to require labeling, the feds overruled it. Congress, despite the groundswell of public opposition, they passed it. And it's a setback for transparency in our food. And I feel as though I am what I eat and I have a right to know. And, you know, it surprised me. I watched the movie What the Health recently. Powerful movie. And even with diabetes, it's like I did not know that eating meat, especially red meat, has direct scientific studies absolutely concluding that it is not a good thing if you have diabetes to eat a lot of red meat. And when questioned about it, the head of the American Diabetes Association got up and, you know, left the interview and said, I'm not going to go there and I'm not going to talk about that. And then these investigators, these two young men who are champions of mine, they found out that one of their biggest funders is the American Cattle Growers Association.
Exactly. So
there you go.
Exactly.
It's not about the money. It's about the money.
That's right. You know, that's fascinating. If you ever watch an interview with Oprah talk about the hardest things that ever happened in her life, she said the hardest thing that ever happened is when the Cattle Association went up against her.
Came after.
You're talking about that.
Yes.
It came after. So oftentimes we believe that we can win these battles if we are smart and produce tons of research showing that we are right. Sometimes we believe that we can win this because we're on the moral high ground, because, you know, we are morally right and there's some writing and some scripture that says it's the right thing to do. Sometimes we believe that we should win just because we're Americans. But in reality, what happens is we go in and we meet with our elected official. We show them this information. We make moral speeches to them. You know, we talk to them about we are Americans. And we lay out our case. And then we walk out the room. Someone else walks in the room with a suitcase full of money. And in this particular case, pictures of the person doing things they shouldn't have been doing in other countries. But we'll leave that part alone for right now. And those other people walk in the room after we come in have more power than we do, because those elected officials, in order to maintain their position of power and stay in the office, need to raise money for elections. Elections in this country now are reaching epic portions in terms of the amount of money that's being spent, even on local school board elections.
I know.
And so until we get money out of politics, our democracy, this experiment that is not that old, by the way, this experiment, as Lincoln said, to see whether it will prevail on this planet. That's what's really happening.
And I just, you know, I don't want to just throw up on people, for lack of a better word. There's probably something much nicer I could say about the bad news. What I want to do through interviewing people like you is get people excited and encouraged and ignited to take back their lives, because their lives are being taken from them. Even when we talk about global trade, that's denying me the right to eat clean food, especially if it's food that's coming in from countries that don't have any near the even weak policies that we have. And I like to think that if something is certified, USDA certified organic, that it means something. And you've convinced me maybe it doesn't mean as much as I thought it does. But when you talk to international trade, it puts us at a very vulnerable position in terms of food safety and food security. It's just like what we should be doing is everything we can to preserve the environment we have here on American soil, to maintain food self-sufficiency and preserve our environment for future generations. And future generations, to me, it's feeling like that's next week, folks. It's not 30 years. It's like next week.
So excellent point.
Okay, and I want
to feed off what you just said there in terms of, you know, not next week, and about some hope. I travel around the country and around the world talking to people about these issues. And in the last year, I have seen such a growth in the energy to save our democracy and to work on these issues. People who have never participated in electoral process before are all of a sudden participating.
Right.
People participated at a lower level now are all of a sudden participating at a higher level. So there is a groundswell of people rising up throughout this country to take our democracy to a level that it really should be in. And it's happening in elections all across the country. In fact, many elections are being won right now by people who have never run for office before and who have very little money and have taken very little money, if any, from major corporations. I'm going to use Virginia as an example.
Yes. Yes. Great example.
Yeah. So in Virginia, they have all these candidates running for office, and over 400 of them took a pledge not to take money from Dominion Power, Dominion Energy, the major energy supplier for that state, a company that has had challenges with coal ash being spread among the people, challenges with pipelines going through people's homes and farms and villages, with increases in rates. Also, the issues that have really harmed people or irritated people. People now come together saying that this one corporation that controls much of Virginia's political power is too powerful and is not working on behalf of the people. So 14 of the new people who came into office last year, who overthrew longstanding elected officials, all took a pledge not to take any money from Dominion. And in elections to come, more and more people are saying, we will not take money from this entity anymore. And this is going to start happening around the country. People are starting to look at these entities that are poisoning us, that are charging us too much for our food, our energy, and saying, if you take money from them, you cannot be about truth, justice, and the American way. If you're taking money from them, how are you also supposed to be supporting life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness when our liberty is being taken away because they're controlling our politics, when our lives are being taken away because pollution is being put into the air and harming our lives? How are you protecting our liberty? And so all across the country, in race after race, these issues are starting to rise to the top, and with new candidates who are rejecting money. So there is definitely hope out there. The question will come, once they come into office, how do we build a movement of people that supports them while they're in office so they don't become corrupt by a very powerful system that will then come in and try to corrupt them? And if not corrupt them, then to break them.
Such a good point. And it does give me hope. I mean, there have been victories of late, and we have to keep working. And one of the most powerful takeaways of this show is you're the first guest that has articulated it so clearly. We are fighting to save our democracy. And it is about the food you eat, and it is about GMOs, and it is about polluting, like pollution offsets. I'm going to have nightmares about that for about 3 weeks. It's like, okay, you can spray that chemical because you're planting trees in Virginia. I mean, it's just not the way that works, and it's out of whack with nature. It just, you know, it absolutely blows me away. I do want to ask you about, I think we need to just like say right now, we need a 2-hour show because I have so many more questions that I want to ask you. It's like, it's driving me crazy, but I want to give you full, you know, time to answer each one of them. But I wonder about what I should start a list. What made me sick last week? Well, what made me sick last week is the evisceration of the Clean Water Act. And I know that a lot of the things that you have been working on, the initiatives, it was under the protection of that act. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, kind of terrify me, I admit it, because damage can be done. Wildlife will be lost, fish will be lost, children will get poisoned, adult will get poisoned. There's real, clear, and present danger once we start polluting our waterways, carte blanche. We've seen it. I was born in 1950. In the 60s, the Hudson River back in New Jersey, you could walk across it. It smelled so bad, like nobody would go near it. And look what we did because of the Clean Water Act. Uh-huh. You know, now it's a money maker, if you want to talk about money. You know, it's just really just so important to me to have people realize, you know, the question I wanted to ask you, have you met anybody in your travels that likes dirty water? That's like, who likes dirty water? We're against the Clean Water Act. Tell me about a common sense explanation for that. I don't have one.
Yeah. You know, we have a campaign called Public Water for All. And some fundamental thoughts to go back. We, this planet, is primarily water.
Right.
Human beings are primarily water.
Right.
When you're in the womb, you're primarily surrounded by water. Water is the essence of our life. It is something that should be a natural right.
A basic human right.
On this planet.
Access to clean water shouldn't be something you have to buy.
Correct. And so, just like this pollution trading crap, someone has thought about how can we make money off of this? How can we make money off of people's basic rights? And they're going around the country privatizing watering systems all around the country. They're offering local governments a handful of money, say, spend it right now on your project, but for the next 50 years or so, we get to raise rates and determine the quality of the water that your people will have. This is madness. Oh, there's certain things that it is the role of government to do. Yeah, complete insanity. There's certain things that is the role of the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. There's certain things that we collectively must maintain control of, and our water is one such thing. So one of the things we have to do is to make sure that we stop this privatization of our water all around the country. And the second thing we should do is for those places that have made the mistake of privatizing, let them come back into the public trust. And lots of cities, towns that have been privatized in the future are looking for ways to get out of them because they're realizing that the companies that bought them did not invest in the infrastructure, that got rid of good paying jobs there, that is really not testing the quality of the water. It's just basically reaping a benefit while the system is falling apart. So we got the opportunity to take those things back. But another thing that your guest can do, your host can do, is they can start demanding that if there is even a discussion of privatization of the water, that there must be a referendum and that at least 55% of the people locally have to approve it. This is what we did in Atlantic City. There was a local referendum where the governor and the locality was trying to privatize the watering system, and the people rose up and said, this is our water, we'll have a referendum on this. So if we should have referendums requiring, putting it in law, that something like our water, if you're even thinking about privatizing it, the people have a right to have a say in that.
It's a public utility. It's a public utility, and our water department is doing a great job making sure that here in the desert we'll have clean drinking water in the years and years to come.
Yeah. And the infrastructure plan that Trump is putting together now was one to basically try to privatize everything, including privatizing additional water. The last thing I want to say about the water, too, by the way, is that if you really knew what was in your water, you would demand better. So I think what your people should do.
I don't mean to laugh, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah. People should go out and order the best water testing kits they can have and demand that their local city or county, whatever, do a significant testing, not just of one or two houses or one or two communities, but do a significant testing of at least 50% of the homes, 50% of the businesses. And see, it doesn't cost much, by the way. And this is the role of the government. The role of the government is to preserve and protect our rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And you cannot have life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness without water. So people should start demanding that the water is actually tested. And then they'll find out what's really in there, and they will demand better. We must become not only informed, but engaged and demanding. Because power concedes nothing without a powerful demand. And we have to become better at demanding in a powerful way that our government serve us.
So let's segue. Okay, it's a perfect segue. When you talk about our eroding democracy, and people don't ever take that too lightly, it's what does make us a strong and a truly great country. Food and Water Watch is suing Jared Kushner. And I think that's big news. I mean, your organization takes on big, bold, scary projects. Why are you suing Jared Kushner?
Well, I won't say too much about that legally right now because there's certain things that can be said publicly and certain things that can't.
Right.
Let me say that we sue on behalf of the people of the United States when there are certain policies that require transparency, where there's a process put in place where the public has the right to know what decisions are being made, who's making those decisions, what's the process for public input, and what are the possible outcomes of those decisions. When those policies are being ignored or shortcut, we step forward and sue to require them to do what is required by law or by regulation. And we're doing that across the board with a variety of entities inside this present Trump administration, which has become adept at taking away the people's ability to see what's really going on with their own government. So we're working hard at that. You know, back to this saving our democracy. You know, our country is based upon laws, and the first set of laws, of course, is the Constitution. And, you know, when they first wrote the Constitution, it was all about how the executive branch would interact with the House and the Senate and the, you know, and with the Supreme Court, all sorts of functionary sort of rules and regulations, all good stuff. But when they were finished and they presented it to the people said, well, that's all good. We like it. But what about the rights of the people? And they first they came up with the first 10 amendments to the Constitution called the Bill of Rights. And then the first one of them is the most fascinating one of them all. The first one, they couldn't decide which one should be one. So they put three of them in there. Most people know about the first two. No freedom of religion. No state religion. You can be whatever religion you want to be. Our founding fathers did not believe that this country should be a particular religious country. The second one was, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of media, because, of course, the king had suppressed the ability to speak freely, and the king had imposed his religion upon the people. So those first two made lots of sense based upon the king who they were opposing. The third one, which most Americans don't know about, which is in the First Amendment, is the right of the people peaceably assemble and petition their government regress. To say to the people, government, you've done, not done the right thing. We want you to change what you're doing and do better. Right? And you know that's only in five constitutions around the world?
I did not.
Only five.
Wow.
So this is a sacred yes. right, a sacred responsibility mm-hmm. that we have to come together and to say to our government, you aren't doing the right thing. Now, if you go back to the Roosevelt administration and all the things that were put into place, as well as the Johnson administration too, it wasn't that Roosevelt woke up one day and said, I think we should have Social Security. I think we should have full employment. I think we should have... No, millions of people, if you look at history, were out there demonstrating on the street saying, our
right.
government needs to do something to help us out
right.
of this.
Right.
You know, Johnson didn't wake up one day and say, oh, I think we should have civil rights. I think we should have women's rights. I think we should have voting rights. No. You know, millions of people were demonstrating, calling for those things. And so this is where we need to move as a country again. We need to engage in the rights and responsibilities given to us as Americans to peacefully assemble and petition our government for redress and to do what the Constitution and the Bill and the Declaration of Independence says, which is to, when the government fails to preserve and protect our rights, it's the right, know the responsibility of the people to rise up and overthrow said government and replace it with a more perfect union. And I believe that's what's actually happening. More people are saying our democracy is under threat. We have to participate in such a way to change it and put people into office who really will be about our people.
And it's just, I mean, we can't say it enough. And I do want to clarify, you're not actually suing Jared Kushner. You're suing the administration and his Office of American Innovation. And it's all
Correct.
About failing to disclose really critical information in the making of this infrastructure plan. Again, it was not full disclosure. Again, it's going to be paid for with taxpayers' money, and I'm a taxpayer, mm-hmm. and I have a right to know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think it really needs to be said that there have been many shady deals and many things that I have not agreed with over the course of history. It's not new. There are other things that have happened since I have been aware of so much more as Mrs. Green. But this administration, if you're me and you're an empath and you're committed to preservation of the planet, it's not a happy day most days, but I really want to get on to, because we promised the listeners that we would get on to, you've had incredible victories. And I would love you to just share several of those victories, because that gives us hope. That makes us know that there can be a light at the end of the tunnel. And Food and Water Watch has had quite an impact. So can you... just highlight some of the victories about which you're most proud.
Oh, gosh. I think the one that make me stand up and say we can win, I'll start with the fracking.
Yes.
A number of years ago when Food and Water Watch started doing this, a lot of individuals and groups, especially even, quite frankly, a lot of the environmental groups said, you cannot ban fracking. We're not powerful enough to ban it. Let us negotiate how they will poison us. And Food and Water Watch said, no, our position is we want to stop them from poisoning us. Now, we can take this position, by the way, because we take no government money.
Right.
We take no corporate money. We are completely supported by our members and our donors. And people give us $35 a month. People give us $60 a month as sustainers. That's what allows us to go forth and do this work in bold, visionary ways that, quite frankly, other organizations and individuals are not able to do. So when we began talking about banning fracking, the overwhelming consensus was that we were nuts. But now we've banned fracking in New York. We banned it in Maryland. We banned it in a number of counties in California. These are some of our bigger states. And we're moving quickly to start banning it almost every county in Florida. So we're moving forward. And all around the country, in the beginning, fracking was something people didn't know about. Now everybody knows that fracking is bad. 85% of Americans think that fracking is bad and we shouldn't do fracking. So that's one big thing.
That's huge. We should just press pause here and have a moment, because think of what you just said and those victories, major, major victories on behalf of all the people whose drinking water won't be destroyed, and because radioactive waste won't be, you know, spewed out all over the land, and hazardous pollutants won't be put into the air. You know, you can find on your website, if you want to educate yourself, you go chapter and verse as to why you should care about fracking and make sure that it's banned anywhere near you, because it'll avoid thousands of deaths. Okay.
Yeah. If the folks want to know more about it, they can go to our website at www.foodandwaterwatch.org. It's pretty easy.
It's really easy.
Foodandwaterwatch.org. Yeah. Now, also, too, if you want to know more about, you know, just banning the fact they're putting this stuff on our food, you can go to foodandwaterwatch.org/just ban it. Just B-A-N-I-T.
I love it. Okay.
Just ban it.
Right, just ban it.
And you can find out more about what's going on. You know, the other thing I want to say, too, and I know we're getting close to our boundary, is that, you know, what we have to do is get off of fossil fuel. And all science shows that we got to really do it pretty quickly, because after 2035, we might have reached a tipping point. So we're very proud of the fact that we've had a bill introduced into Congress by Representative Gabbard to have America go 100% renewable by 2035. With clear benchmarks on how to do it and when to do it, we can do this. There's plenty of solar energy out there. There's plenty of wind. There's plenty of geothermal energy out there. There's all sorts of ways that we can go renewable by 2035. Not that we can, but we must, or we might reach that point where there is no coming back. And by the way, a number of states are also looking to pass 100% renewable bills as well, to say their state will engage in practices and policies to get us to be 100% renewable. So we're proud of that we're actually leading this national campaign to get our country to commit to be 100% renewable by 2035. And this is catching on all around the country. We are the most powerful country on the planet, not just with the biggest military by far, not just with the biggest economy by far, but with a landmass, resources, intellectual capacity, and with commitment, we can do these things. We're getting close to the end. I want to go back to something you said earlier, too. You said you are a passionate person. Remember you said that?
Yes. Just ask my friends.
Well, you know, compassion. The word passion is Greek for suffer. And compassion is to suffer with,
come to witness with.
And so that's where we are now. We need to suffer with each other in such a way that we feel each other's pain and desires and needs and hopes about how this environment and this economy is taking away our life, living pursuit of happiness. If we can talk to each other about that across these crazy political boundaries, where 85% of us agree on almost everything, 85% of Americans agree on almost everything we just said. But because there's money in politics that allows them to divide and conquer us, we are being destroyed not only as our planet, but also our democracy. And so we just need to be engaged in these conversations with people who don't look like us, who don't pray like us, who don't eat like us, and talk about this wonderful democracy we have, this wonderful planet we have, and what we can do to make sure this country becomes 100% renewable by 2035 to both save our planet and to save our democracy. We can do it. We just have to really get engaged in the tools given to us, which is this electoral process.
And one of the things that I want to reiterate again is when you talk about common sense, which you do, this is common sense. This is a renewable. That's a really big word. It's going to show up every day. The sun pretty much is going to show up. The sun will come out tomorrow. It is less expensive than many. It's the price of solar is now so affordable. And big corporations are realizing that they can cut down so much on their power bill. And the other operative word is it's clean. It doesn't hurt us.
Yes.
Wind and solar don't hurt our environment. Yes. They're not producing toxic chemicals. They're not, you know, upper respiratory disease is the third cause of death in our county. Mm. Upper respiratory disease because of, you know, a lot of factors, but this is one of them. And I just want to do a little short shout out when you talk about member supported. That's really important. And I want to do a personal shout out to our tribe. We really are at Mrs. Green's World doing our best to create a global community of people who truly care about this planet, about our health, and the health of those we love. And we need all of your help, our listeners out there, to continue and to expand our work. And you can join our movement by visiting MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member. And we really hope you do. We want to blow the lid off of this. I'd love to be on the air every day with people like you, David, because we've been successful in delivering our message in such a way that people mostly are ignited. They can find their passion. And I say to somebody sometimes, find the thing that you care about. If it's rescuing animals, if it's making sure there's clean air, if it's clean water, if it's GMO labeling on food, find that issue, be passionate about it, and get into action. And if you're really down in the dumps, go to foodandwaterwatch.org and find out all the wonderful fights they're fighting and the victories that they're experiencing. Because that's absolutely the truth. You are winning some really amazing victories. And I want the last few minutes to be yours. What are some of the biggest challenges that you and your team are working on for 2018? If we have time, that might be the second hour of the show. But what do you think are some of the biggest things we need to be looking at and focusing on in terms of finding our voices?
I think, all politics is local. And so, as you just said, find that thing that you're passionate about locally and get involved locally. Go and talk to your local elected or appointed officials about what you're passionate about. And don't just go by yourself. Take your children. Take your neighbors. Invite that person to come to your church and talk, or your church, your mosque, your synagogue, your gardening club, wherever you're gathered up with other like-thinking people who may not agree on the solution, but agree there is a problem, and have them come and talk to you. The more we raise these issues, the more it has to be addressed. Right now, these issues aren't being raised sufficiently at the local level. So that's the first thing I would say. And the second thing I would say is figure out a way to amplify your power. Not only can you vote, but you can also get 10 or 12 of your neighbors together, invite elected officials over to your house and say, you know what, you're running for office, you want our vote, work on these environmental issues, work to save our planet, work to take no money from corporations. So really figure out a way to maximize your power. But the main thing, find some people who you love and spend time with them. Even in these dark places and dark times, it is love that will light the way for us. So figure out who those people you love and who love you and spend as much possible time as you can.
What a wonderful message. What a wonderful message to give people. Spend time with people you love and value that. I was listening to a show last night it was Van Jones and Oprah. Of course, I was listening to Van Jones and Oprah, right? It's much better than any of the other news stations. And Oprah was talking about how we have to shift all the negative conversations. Really, we do. And we have to focus on the light, go into the light. And she's right. And Van Jones said, I'm struggling with that. And I'm like, yeah, Van, you and me both, buddy. And she said, you have to start your day with gratitude. Every day, every day. Mm-hmm. And I did this morning, and I thought about my gratitude list and my comfortable home, my wonderful family. I go brush my teeth. I flush the toilet. I take a shower. We have so much to be grateful for. And then the second part of that is, for me, it's all worth fighting to protect. So get ignited. I want to recommend everyone listening to this show, go to foodandwaterwatch.org. Consider a donation, a monthly recurring donation, right after you did the one to Mrs. Green's World. But it's Food and Water Watch, you've got our backs. You're fighting fights that we're not even aware of. You're leading the clean energy revolution and public water for all and getting rid of fracking and environmental laws that impact the marketplace. I mean, there are so many campaigns, and people don't have to be overwhelmed. Pick your one. That's what I say. Pick your one. We can't fix it all. So pick the one that speaks to your heart and that you know you want to have in place to protect your children, and just do something. So, David, needless to say, This was a pleasure. And I don't know if you noticed, but we killed all the breaks because I wanted to. It's like, no, we can't have any breaks and interrupt this passionate man who is fighting and who I know you're leading a lot of people to the light, to solutions, and to protecting Mother Earth and all her bounty. So I appreciate you. And I don't know if Winona Howder remembers me, but I hope she does. Upcoming on April 5th, a great show about recycling bags, baubles, and ball gowns for a local charity. And our national show is Ashwin Naidu. We're talking about protecting the fishing cat. Make it a great green day. Go out there and make some noise and make a difference. Thank you.